Champion in college basketball determined tonight. So you're listening to Ray and Tay today, and I'm Ray, Tall Rayside.
And I'm Tay, Eric Taylor, and we're hyped up. It's time for some serious basketball. Are you guys ready? Give us a call. Give us your picks, your predictions. Join the conversation, 718-664-9098. Like always, and we'll have to get to some of your emails today at rayandtaytoday@gmail.com. Send us your emails with your picks. Ray, I see so far it looks like most people are picking Kentucky, but we got some UConn folks. I don't know if they're alum. I'm looking over these emails now coming in. Tweet at us. Hit us up at Facebook, at Ray and Tay Today. And check out the website. We're very interactive, at rayandtaytoday.com. Ray, let them know, man. We've got some breaking news. We got the stuff, but it's a basketball show. Let them know.
Yeah, it's Championship Monday, so you know that's gonna lead our discussion. But before we get into that, we'll take you around the world of sports. So we have a couple signings. We've got some free agency happening in football. We've got opening day for the Yankees. So Derek Jeter's last opening day in the Bronx. We'll tell you a little bit about that, and then we'll get into it. We'll talk NCAA hoops. We got the women and the men. Potentially, UConn again could be Storrs, Connecticut could be the home of the women's and the men's national championship.
10 years later, that'd be incredible.
So we'll,
we gotta talk a little about the NBA, man. The playoffs are heating up. Some big games.
Yeah, and then at the end, we'll finish the show with some NBA talk. We'll talk about these playoff races. We still don't have – I pretty much concluded that in the East our Knicks are out and the Hawks
we'll talk
are in,
about
even
that.
Though we'll talk about that. But the West still has three teams.
The
Wild
West.
So it is the Wild West.
So look,
let's
jump into it, man. Great news in the Bronx. The Yankees won 4-2 over the Baltimore Orioles. Derek, like you said, Derek Jeter's on the world tour, right? Like Mariano Rivera, you know, he's saying goodbye. His first, last opening day in the Bronx started off with a strikeout. I don't know how he did for the day. You know how Jeter wound up bringing it home?
Yeah, he scored
not
a run.
Not bad. Yeah. See, you know what I like about this Yankee team and this lineup, and the Yankees are now above 500, 4-3. I think what you're going to see is that, you know, by the way, you see the young third baseman's been hitting. Ichiro's been hitting. You know, guys are, you know, just getting runs. So I think this team, what's going to be fascinating is, one, can they score? And then, you know, CC got his first win. You know, can they consistently pitch? I guess that's going to be the main question for the Yankees, if they can compete in the AL East. So, but I want to ask you this. We're talking about, you know, it's just breaking news, so we'll just hit it real fast. But Derek Jeter, maybe we talked about being top 6, 7 Yankees of all time. Where would you put him shortstops? Where's Derek Jeter in shortstops? And, you know, and I guess you have to eliminate A-Rod with the steroids. But Ripken, Ozzie Smith, some of the old legendary shortstops. Where do you put Derek Jeter, you think, in the top 5 shortstops of all time?
Yeah, I think that because the shortstops historically have not been a great offensive position, so Derek Jeter doesn't take a hit because, you know, he doesn't really hit for power, but he obviously hits, you know, it's basically a single hit, right? And
right. He's
got 3,300 or so hits. He's got 5
yeah.
gold gloves. So you could argue towards the second half of his career his range was limited. So he was a good defensive shortstop, above average, but not great.
Right.
You know, he was not in the
but
category of
clutch
Ozzie
legendary
Smith
great plays. He made the plays he needed to make.
Yeah.
You got to say that.
He didn't have great range.
Fair.
So if you think about all-time shortstops, I mean, there's only a handful of them. So it's actually harder. It's funny. It's harder to be an all-time Yankee than it is to be an all-time shortstop. Because all-time shortstop, you got to figure, you know, Cal Ripken Jr., maybe a Honus Wagner. You know, you look at a guy like Robin Yount, but he played back half of his career
left
in the outfield.
Left field, too, yeah.
So
Ozzie Smith.
Ozzie Smith, Barry Larkin.
Ozzie
Guillen.
Yeah,
you know, let's
what about
play
Dave
two
Concepcion?
Ernie Banks.
You want to talk about Dave Concepcion,
oh,
baby.
You're killing me. Ernie Banks. So I would say Derek Jeter probably falls in the next, I mean, in the top two shortstop of all time. I mean, you can make the argument he's the best shortstop of all time. Why not? Especially given his playoff success and his clutch play in the playoffs. I mean, you got to think Ernie Banks. I'd take Robin Yount out because he played two positions. And he won MVPs at two positions. But, you know, I don't know how you want to look at Robin Yount. But
can
I would
you
say
really
Ernie
say
Banks,
Jeter's better than Ripken, though? Ripken played, you know, has the record for most consecutive games.
He moved to third
games
at the end of his career.
Yeah, but
you know,
he played a lot
of
shortstop.
I would say Ernie Banks and Cal Ripken are the two. I mean, you take Alex Rodriguez, Honus Wagner, you know, we didn't see him play, so I don't know. He's got great
Alan
stats.
Alan Trammell, Detroit Tiger fans, I just got an email.
Trammell,
don't forget about Trammell.
So, it's Ripken and Ernie Banks to me.
I think maybe
those
we'll
are,
have to do
a
show and have the callers call in about that. Their top 10 maybe or top 5 shortstops of all time, because I definitely think it's fascinating. So, like you said, some NFL signings. I got to ask you, and I just threw it out there on Twitter for folks. Manziel, Bridgewater is visiting the Buccaneers. Running back Andre Brown was with the Giants, signed with the Texans to, you know, sort of play with Foster. I think that's actually an underrated signing. Really good move for the Texans, because I think Andre Brown, healthy, is a very good running back and could help Foster, you know, since they lost Tate to the Browns. Brown signed wide receiver Nate Burleson, which I think is a good pickup for 1 year, a veteran receiver to help whatever quarterback they have there, whether it's Hoyer or, you know, Bortles or one of these young quarterbacks. But to lead Raider Nation, would you want Johnny Manziel or Matt Schaub to lead Raider Nation? What are you thinking? Because he's visiting the Raiders yesterday and today after he was at the Final Four, Johnny Manziel, you know, globetrotting.
Well,
Raiders take a shot at him?
The better question is, it depends on who you get in the draft, right? If you were to get Sammy Watkins, would you be better off with Sammy Watkins and Matt Schaub versus just Johnny Manziel and Matt Schaub? You know what I mean? So if you have questions about these top two or three, Bortles, Bridgewater, and Manziel, if they're able to be fantastic quarterbacks, maybe you pray that Sammy Watkins is available at 5, and then in the second round, maybe David Carr, you trade back into the end of the first round
and
you
get
David Carr's little brother, or beginning of the second round, third round, you know, maybe you get another quarterback and hope that you can catch lightning in a bottle, Russell Wilson style. But if you have doubts, I don't have a doubt that Sammy Watkins is going to be, you know, an elite wide receiver, and they need to give their quarterback some weapons.
Here,
so,
look, live on Twitter, I threw it out there, live on Twitter, the tweet handle Silk says to Ray and Tay, Johnny. So some of the fans out there, they want Johnny football. Thanks for tweeting at Ray and Tay today. You know, that's Raider Nation, we got people responding already. Marcel Reese is a fake Twitter handles responding, retweeted it out. So that's what you like to see, live interaction. We're live on the air. People are responding, and that's what it's about. I guess for you, I got to ask you, today starts the off-season workouts for the 7 new head coaches. Does Jay Gruden probably have the best job in terms of coming, you know, as a new head coach with new talent? Do you like the Texans? Do you like the Lions for Caldwell? Do you like Bill O'Brien with the Texans? Do you like Jay Gruden with the Redskins? What coach is smiling the most today for off-season workouts? in the NFL. Or Lovey down in Tampa. Lovey.
Yeah, Lovey Dovey. He's going back home, or at least back where his, you know, assistant days, coordinator days started. I got to think Jay Gruden's going to have a lot of scrutiny in Washington. But you know what? If I have Alfred Morris and DeSean Jackson and Jordan Reed and, of course, RG3 and the league leader in receptions in Pierre Garçon, and I'm an offensive-minded guy, as Jay Gruden is, I have a big, fat Mountain Berry Kool-Aid. Now, by the way, do they still have Mountain Berry Kool-Aid out there? Because if you don't know about Mountain Berry,
nah,
I don't drink Kool-Aid anymore
these
secret,
days. That's
secret, yo. That's secret, right? That was
I'm saying it's sacred. It's sacred.
Sacred.
That's like special. Like that's like going to like you know, the park and in our little home field, you know, that we used to play at, and like, you know,
that's
the dugout and cats.
But you know,
yeah,
the Twinkies. You know, that's like the Twinkie saga, right? They pulled Twinkies. So Hostess decided we will no longer sell Twinkies, and then there was this revolt.
That's un-American.
They were selling Twinkies on eBay for $1,000. So,
oh my God!
No, but in all seriousness, I think Washington Redskins is a great job. If you can get that defense right, and they did sign Arakpo to that 1 year tender, that is an offensive play. Especially because RG3 was a shell of himself last year. If he gets to anything close to what he was rookie year, and add DeSean Jackson, and now Morris will be in his third year. Pierre Garçon led the league in receptions. Their tight end Jordan Reed is fantastic. That's something special, that offense. So it's all about if they can get that defense right, that's fantastic. I would love to be that coach. And you know what? The Houston Texans, for being 2-14, not bad.
Having
to
the first
have the
pick
number
and
one
then
pick
the 33rd pick. Yeah, it's not bad.
Yeah, and still good point. 1-33, and still have a decent team, a decent roster. Usually if you're the number one pick in the draft, you have a horrible roster.
Hey,
but
if I walk out of there with Clowney and Derek Carr, I'm happy.
You could win 10 games. I wouldn't be surprised they won 10 games.
Yeah, especially in that division. I think the Colts are the team you got to match up with, but they still might have some offensive line woes, even though they signed Hakeem Nicks. It's going to be interesting. But you know what? Let's not get too excited with the NFL. We got a lot of NFL draft talk coming up. We'll be getting real heavy with that. You know, more free agent signings. You know, we'll see Chris Johnson today at 401 officially an NFL free agent. We'll see if the Jets, the Falcons, Bills, Dolphins, somebody steps up, signs him. Maybe, you know, even though people are saying the Rams don't want him, maybe they jump in last minute because his coach, you know, is over there with the Rams now, Jeff Fisher. We'll see what happens with a running back like Chris Johnson. But let's talk about that Final Four. It was amazing. And you got to look at the first game. We both said on this show, Florida and Kentucky. You had a 10-point Florida win, I had a 3-point Florida win. UConn is playing tonight in the championship. What do you think was the biggest factor? You don't want to talk about injuries or Wilbekin's knees. I think the defense of Napier and Bo Wright had more of a factor on Florida's guards than anything. But did you think the zone really threw them off? And Daniels, remember I said if he gets that double-double and he had 20 and 10, they really, UConn really, and Kevin Ollie put it on Coach Donovan and the senior leader Gators. Tell me your thoughts on that game in the Final Four.
UConn is reincarnated from just a few years ago, and a young man named Shabazz Napier is really Kemba Walker. Kemba Walker is playing 8 years of college basketball. No, but for real, you know what? And I hate that this happened. So I was really rooting for Florida from the beginning of the year when I said, you know, these guys can play and they're just a bunch of good basketball players. Nobody's great. Good basketball players that stuck around together, went to three Elite Eights, and now their first Final Four. But they don't have exceptional players on that team. Scottie Wilbekin was the SEC Player of the Year, but even he and Casey Prather, they're not great. They're good, very good college basketball players, but they can't, you know, single-handedly carry the team. Now, keep in mind,
if you feel like to win it all, you need at least one great player.
You need that one singular,
and Napier is that guy.
Exceptional athlete or exceptional player, and Shabazz Napier is that for UConn.
For Connecticut,
Florida.
Yeah.
Florida just, for some reason, they had talent, they had depth, they were the only team that was in the top 20 in offense and top 20 in defense, but I don't know if they were shell-shocked that Connecticut hung with them, but like we said, they shouldn't have been. They lost to them. That was their last loss before they won on that 30-game winning streak. So when I look back at it, you know, and you said it to me off-air, you said Kevin Ollie out-coached Billy Donovan and went to the smaller lineup, and I just think that Connecticut, there's something special about Connecticut and their ability to adapt to diversity, playing a bigger team, playing a smaller team. Napier was in foul trouble in the beginning of the tournament. Then he hurt his ankle. Then Boatwright had to take over. DeAndre Daniels did his thing. Everybody contributes, and they have the star. So their roles are set. In Kentucky, it's the exact opposite. We'll get to it in a sec, because they've got people all over that can take over. Turns out that this Harrison kid has just got three-point clutchness in his veins. But
that
the Florida team,
The
Florida team, you said, well, who's going to bring them back? Is it going to be Frazier? Is it going to be Wilbekin? Is it going to be Prather? Young's not that talented offensively. So I don't know. And I was rooting for Florida because I saw in them a team that was, you know, seniors, people that stuck around with the program, bought into what Billy Donovan was saying. But you know what? I love what Connecticut did. If we talk about this off air a little bit, if they win, that means they will have won for the fourth time since 1999. Fourth time in 15 years. That's
like a little dynasty.
Unbelievable program.
That's
a
dynasty.
Yeah. I tried to think back in history, and I was thinking to myself, if Duke can do it, I mean, pretty much just since the Krzyzewski era, you know, Duke's first title was in 92, and their last one was 2 years ago. So Duke did it over a span of 20 years. Kentucky does it this year, they will have done it in a span since 96, so it would have been 18 years. And the only other team to really do it was UCLA back in the days when they won all those titles with Bill Walton and Lou Alcindor. And then Kentucky did it in the 60s and 70, or 50, 60, and 70. So this is unbelievable what Connecticut's about to do. And don't tell anybody. It's with two coaches, and just that program is just doing big things.
Well, quiet is kept. I think you're going to have to, you know, we talk about the blue bloods in basketball, and that's North Carolina, Kansas, Kentucky, you know, I guess now Duke. Well, you know what? UConn's in that conversation. They are like, we are on the Mount Rushmore of college hoops, y'all. Don't sleep on us. And give Kevin Ollie a lot of credit. I mean, a scrappy guy, had like an 11-year career, played for 10 NBA teams, usually a backup point guard, a tweener guard. He could, you know, play the one, defend the two a little bit. He was smart enough to stay with teams and did what he had to do. And I think, you know, coming to this program after leaving such a legend, and it's always, they would say, you don't want to be the guy that follows the legend. You want to be the guy after the guy. Well, he's the guy, and guess what? They were, you know, the team was on probation. But so quickly, he's turned it around in just 2 years, and look where he's at. So Kevin Ollie needs to be given supreme props, you know, just as well, you know, we move forward to the other game. Kentucky-Wisconsin, great game, but this was the question, and this is what they did. They took Kaminsky out of the game, 8 points. And I think with Alex Poitras, the big boy Randall and Johnson, they were just too much.
Dakari Johnson, too much.
Stein didn't do anything.
That,
and
you know what, Trayvon Jackson, if that shot goes in and he had a great look, we could be talking about Wisconsin in the finals.
No, definitely, definitely. I mean, what Harrison did with that shot, I mean, it was ridiculous. That boy is clutch, man. He's got big blue cojones, you know. I mean, he's a beast. I think the improvement of them, you've got to give that to the coach, Calipari. He has had confidence in them all year long when everybody in Kentucky and all over the basketball world, they were ripping those Harrison twins, and the Harrison twins have stayed through it and just ice water. I mean, Andrew and Harrison, Aaron with the threes, Andrew getting to the Baja, getting it to the bucket and penetrating. And I just, you know, I guess, you know, we'll preview it in a second, but I just think it's so hard to stop Randle. And in this tournament, they're like plus 45 on the glass and rebounding in games. Connecticut's like plus one. And so I don't know if Daniels and the big guys on UConn, if they can handle Kentucky on the boards. That's such a huge advantage for UConn. So for Kentucky, when they throw the shot up, if they miss it, somebody's going up there to keep it alive. And even the Harrison twins are pretty tall, man. They're both, what, 6'4", you know, solid-sized guards, 6'4", 6'5". So you got to like that.
Yeah, you what, Wisconsin, I give them credit. You know, they had a great game plan.
Brush,
and
yeah.
They executed almost perfectly. The one free throw they missed, what were they, 21 of 22 or something like that? The one free throw they miss is the one
Jackson's,
that causes this game to look totally different. Up two versus up three is a complete, you know, completely different game. Because when you're up three, you don't have to worry about rebounding. You don't have to worry about protecting inside. You just protect outside. You protect the three, and you just keep shooting free throws to win the game. And it's pretty ironic that the team that was almost perfect at the line misses one, and that ultimately cost them the game. But I think UConn will have to learn a bit from Wisconsin and keep the game tight. I would try to get them in foul trouble. I'd try to get to the bonus quickly so that Boatwright and Napier can just shoot. And I'm actually surprised at how
And they
how
can do
well.
That with those guys, too.
Yeah, and I'm actually
that.
Surprised at how well these kids are shooting in that monstrous
in that dome. It's amazing.
Stadium.
Give them credit. Hey, where are all the critics now, right? Dissing college basketball. Well, this was a great college basketball season, and the quality of play, which people were ripping all last season, it's been amazing. This has been a great tournament. These kids, you know, people who boo-hooing about the NBA. Listen, this NBA draft is going to be legendary. And, I mean, cats that are like, you know, McAdoo and Wilbekin and some of these other cats, they're going to be second-round picks. You know, I mean, they're projecting one of the Harrison twins. I think it's Aaron. One of them is like a late first rounder, and the other one is like maybe a second round pick at NBADraft.com. So this is fascinating. I mean, the talent that is going to be in this draft, I'm blown away by. And give these kids credit. Like you said, shooting in that dome is not easy in Jerry's world. It's pretty good. So let's talk about tonight. What are your first thoughts? Let me ask you this. Daniels, he's a skinny kid from Los Angeles. Can he actually get another double-double? I mean, that would be the key to me, and not just with Boatwright and Napier challenging the Harrison twins and maybe getting them in foul trouble, but I want to see Samuels and see if they go small against a big Connecticut team with the three-guard lineup, and I want to see who's going to be able to stop Young. I think Young's shooting outside. Your lefty, James Young, is really stepping up in this tournament, and I think he's key for Kentucky. But inside, can Daniels bang with some of these boys? And then the other big kid for Connecticut, can they bang with them?
I think they can, and I think that this game, for Connecticut to win, this game has to be very similar to the Wisconsin game. I think Connecticut has to play from ahead. Connecticut needs to force Kentucky to take bad shots, and then when they do, they need to control the defensive glass, or at least hold their own, right? You can't get out-rebound, because that's ultimately what kept Kentucky in all of these games. The same way that Kentucky won, they could have lost. They could have lost to Memphis State. They could have lost to, Wichita State. They could have lost to Michigan. They could have lost to Wisconsin. All of these games are close, but I think that the difference in these games is that even when Kentucky's down, their offensive rebounding, defensive rebounding too, but their offensive rebounding in particular is keeping them in these games. They're getting two, three,
and they're
four
making
attempts.
Those second chance shots.
Yeah, and
you
that's
can't keep
the
giving
key.
Them.
It's like
it's going
to
be hard to stop
baseball.
Rando though.
You're giving them four
see.
Outs, five outs in baseball.
Yeah, exactly.
You can't do that. You got to clean up the glass. But yeah, I'm looking forward to a good game, and it's different styles. You know, the senior and junior backcourt for Connecticut,
yeah.
They both shoot in the mid-80s. So I think like Wisconsin, they're going to get to the line. And if they go, you know, 17 for 20 from the line and they're only a minus 5 on the glass, Connecticut has a chance.
This is an NBA draft camp preview to see Andrew and Aaron go up against Napier, because they're going to be battling in some of these pre-draft camps coming up soon. I got to tell you, I think for me, the key for UConn to win this game is definitely the foul trouble. But I think UConn's going to have to hit some threes. They're going to have to open it up, and I think they're going to have to really, when they play that zone, because he's going to put the zone on them. And whether they put in Samuels or whatever lineup they go with, or they even bring in Omar Calhoun and plays a little bit, we'll see what happens if they get in any foul trouble. Because remember, they could get in foul trouble, their guards too, and they'll have to go to Samuels and Calhoun, just because the Harrison twins, they can get to the rack and cause fouls themselves. I'm going to be interested to see if that zone makes Young, you know, if they could sort of confuse them to, you know, not be able to get it inside to Randall and Johnson. And if Young is going to be able to hit the three. So I would say this, the only way UConn wins is if you're going to have a big scoring night from Napier and DeAndre Daniels. They're both going to have to get 20. I think for me, Kentucky's going to be too much. I don't think you're going to be able to stop Johnson and Randall. I'm looking for – they might even have all five guys, the starting lineup for Kentucky in double figures, but I'm definitely looking for probably like 73-69, 73-70, close game. Kentucky, Blue Blood Nation, Kentucky Wildcats cut down the nets, baby. It's going to be exciting. I can't wait. I love it.
Okay. All right. So if I had to give a score.
7-8, Ray. Give me a score. You got to give a score. You know how it
well,
is.
Okay, so I'll give you a score, and then I'll tell you about 7-8. This is very interesting.
Yeah.
I think similarly. I think Kentucky will ultimately have too much. I think they'll win, I'll call it 70-64. I think they'll win by six. I think it'll be a fairly tight game. I don't think any team will run away with it. But down the stretch, Kentucky's ability to rebound and their ability to create their own shots and make shots will help them lead them to victory. Now, if Kentucky wins, that means an 8-seed won. Now, you and I both know they're not a real 8-seed. They were the number one team
right.
in the nation preseason. But
an 8-seed has won before.
This will mean that Villanova, the very first year in 85 that they expanded to a 64-team field, was the first and only 8-seed to win since then. So Kentucky and Villanova will be in that category. Now, interestingly enough, if UConn wins, they'll be the second lowest seed to win, because a 7 has
never
made it to the Final Four. So they'll be
That's
the first
crazy.
And only 7 seed. That's kind of a quirky stat, given that an 8-seed has won at all. But still, you're talking about whoever wins is going to be either tied for or the second lowest seeded team to ever win a national championship. So that tells you the nature of college basketball. And these are legitimate, like we said, top 5 programs. And they are 7 and 8 seeds.
You know what's interesting, and just to let the audience know, with us being both Big East guys, UConn's in the AAC, but they're a Big East team in our hearts, so we're rooting for Connecticut. I mean, it's Tar Heel fans can't necessarily roll with Kentucky, so we're rooting for UConn. But the reality is, I wouldn't be surprised if UConn wins, but I just think Kentucky's too much. But I'll say this: when they went to go visit SMU in their conference, Coach Ollie, he set up a little tour for the kids to go to Jerry's World, AT&T Stadium, to see where they wanted to go. So they had their little vision board. You know what I mean? They had their little walk and little tour. And to me, that's special. I think that's the stuff that, you know, gives you chills, and you could see that in replaying the movie. And, you know, sometimes you just wonder if, you know, with sports, if it's, there's a little bit of fate or destiny or something like riding here. And that's what happened with Kemba and them, just that magical run. And I guess you just can't sleep on what Napier could do, because I think he's a little bit better than the Harrison twins. Might not be in the future, but right now I think he is, and I think that special ability and that savviness, you know, maybe that will be, you know, what they need to just pull it out and just get a little rough, rugged and raw, you know, a little EPMD on you, you know. So either way, it's going to be fun. I'll tell you this: shout out to my Lady Terps who got smashed by Notre Dame. This has been building for a long time on the women's side, and it'd be so cool to be a student. Yeah, but it would be so cool to be a student of Astoria, Connecticut right now, because undefeated Notre Dame and undefeated UConn, you know, went on to win. Stanford hung tough with UConn, but the ladies, UConn, they took them out, and Notre Dame put it on my Maryland Terps, so, you know, I bid them adieu. But what, 63-0 between Connecticut and Notre Dame? That's incredible. And so the whole season, everybody's been waiting to see this, because they used to play each other, right, in the Big East. But now Notre Dame's in ACC and UConn's in AAC. So this is a great matchup for women's college basketball on Tuesday night. So, I actually think the way it's looking, I feel like Notre Dame's going to finally win for their coach, and they're going to beat UConn.
You do?
I think the Notre Dame women are going to pull it out. Yeah, man.
Well,
I think
Muffet McGraw, the coach at Notre Dame, called Gino, he called him a bully. Like, he's
I know.
Bully. I tell you what, though, Gino Auriemma.
He's a man. He's a great coach.
You got to either love him or hate him, but he is unique, because most coaches do the politically correct thing, and they just say, yeah, I want to win in advance, and I just want to move forward. Gino says, no, I want to dominate. I want to crush other women's basketball teams. And you know what? It's refreshing that everybody doesn't have to be cookie cutter, and he can step out there and say what most coaches probably feel, and he's able to do it, and he's able to back it up. And he says, yeah, I want to crush teams. I want to show them that I'm the big bad kid on the block, and our team is the bully, and we're better, and we're bigger, and we're faster, and we're much stronger. So good for them that they can have their personalities and have success too. Now, granted, you know, everybody's going to call him a bully, and so it will be very interesting to see. Now, he's got the player of the year in Breonna Stewart, but –
yeah.
You know what? This is the first time that I can remember, maybe it's the first time ever, that two undefeated teams are playing for the national championship in women. I mean, it's never happened in men's, but in women's college basketball. So basically, Tennessee used to be his number one rival, but now Notre Dame is his number one rival. So since the 2010-11 season, Connecticut has lost 11 times. So in four full seasons, they've lost 11 times. Seven
That's
of the 11
been.
Have been to Notre Dame.
Yeah.
Seven of
oh,
their
yeah,
11
no,
losses
this is
four
no,
years have been to Notre Dame.
This is a legit number one against number one matchup. This
yeah,
is,
exactly.
You know.
This is one versus one. This is not one versus
yeah.
two. This is definitely one versus one. Goliath versus Goliath.
It's going to be awesome. So I think we got two great games, back-to-back nights. Either way, I think, fans will, you know, be more than happy. And then, you know, you turn your focus, you know, obviously to the NBA and the NBA playoffs and stuff. You know what? Let's take a quick break, and we'll be right back, Rante, to talk about the NBA and NBA playoffs.
We're back. We're keeping it with the round ball. We're keeping it.
You
we're
know.
Keeping our dribble alive. You know, like the coaches always used to say, keep your dribble alive.
Keep your dribble alive.
Yeah,
well, you know who's not keeping anything alive?
To the NBA.
Indiana Pacers. The Indiana Pacers, Ray, are coughing it up. I'm telling you right now, not only are you going to have to rock a Charlotte Bobcats jersey, but the Bobcats might push the Pacers to the limit in the first round in that 2-7 matchup. It's all basically almost over for the battle for the one seed. I think the Heat are going to take that. They, you know, took care of the next Sunday. You know, poor Mello was banged up. JR set a record, yo. JR is shooting his butt off. 10 three-pointers made, a Knicks record, but then for three games set an NBA record for the most three-pointers made for, you know, three-game stretch. But the Pacers, they got some serious issues. I mean, it's, you know, the rumors of Bird coming down to coach. It's Stevenson not passing the ball and players don't like him. West and Hibbert are upset about their shot selection. Hibbert's not listening to Vogel anymore. I mean, what do you think is going on? Should they have not traded Granger, or is it just it didn't matter? Was it bringing in Hibbert and Turner threw everything off, or were they destined to head to this place? Because right now, they're a freaking mess, yo.
I got to tell you, in retrospect, trading Danny Granger was a mistake. And I don't know exactly what they got out of it, because Evan Turner is a young player, and he is not under contract. So maybe what we thought was maybe they get insurance in case Deshaun Stevenson leaves, and they're not able to re-sign him.
Lance, your boy Lance.
I keep calling him Deshaun. My fault.
Lance,
he's Brooklyn's own, you know.
That's what I'm saying, and he might leave, and so I guess Turner would be the insurance for that, and they might want him to leave. Because maybe he's being too much of a knucklehead.
He is a little bit of a knucklehead, although he had a great first half of the season. I mean, we could argue that
should
he
have been an all-star.
As valuable to his team as anybody in terms of what he did offensively, defensively. He was sort of like the poor man's Ron Artest when Artest used to be able to impact the game on both sides. Now, granted, he wasn't the best offensive player, but he was a good offensive player, and he was an excellent defensive player. So, you know, in retrospect, Danny Granger giving them that potent score, because that's what's missing, that potent score. And now when they got your boy from the Sixers, Evan Turner, he was scoring 17 a game, but he was scoring 17 a game as a high-volume shooter, so he was a low-percentage shooter on a bad team. So you always got to be worried when you get a high scorer that doesn't shoot a high percentage on a bad team.
That's funny stack. That's funny money. It's not money ball.
Exactly.
That's funny money.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Sometimes stats are deceiving, and sometimes stats can tell you a little something. So trading. It turns out that trading Danny Granger probably hurt them. But I tell you what, these problems are not on Danny Granger or Evan Turner. These are some fundamental problems that they have. They have some teamwork issues. They have some, you know, Lance Stevenson holding the ball too much, and then Hibbert and West being a little grumpy, and then Paul George.
And your best player, George, is not doing too much.
Ever since, his issues off the court came to light that, you know, last few months, his shooting percentage has gone down, his play has been affected. So I'm not sure that Larry Bird, maybe Larry Bird would make a difference as the coach. You know, we had reported that because we heard it on ESPN that Larry Bird was coming down. I don't know what they do. Now, the good thing for them is they get a pretty putrid, Hawks team or the Bobcats.
They're playing the Bobcats. They're not getting number one over Miami.
The one thing that they get with the Bobcats is the fact that the Bobcats' strength is basically Al Jefferson and Kemba Walker, right? And so they have size. So Al Jefferson will get, I don't know if he'll get neutralized, but certainly Al Jefferson's not going 40-20 on them, right? They're too big for that. So they can somewhat slow out or at least, you know, mitigate Al Jefferson's strength. And then it's about keeping Kemba Walker
but
in front of you.
What about, Kemba?
Do you put Stevenson on him?
You going to put Stevenson on him? Because George Hill will get eaten alive. I'll tell you that right now. George Hill will get eaten alive, so you're going to have to
maybe
put Stevenson on him.
Defender. I don't mind George Hill on him, and then you put Stevenson on him. You switch off a little bit. You could put Paul George on him for a couple possessions, just because of that size and that length. You know, you can neutralize that team. I think that's not a bad matchup for Indiana. I think they win.
But
probably
the next round
one.
Could be a serious issue. Playing maybe the Raptors, who's just spanked them. I think it was that Friday night. The Raptors playing them. You know, in that 3-6 matchup, Raptors Washington. Well, if Raptors hold on, Raptors have been playing pretty good against Indiana this season. I don't know what the season series is, but the way Toronto's been playing, they could be a little dangerous too, and maybe they luck up not having to play the Brooklyn-Chicago winner, which Miami is going to have a rough time dealing with. Now, look, we talked about it. You always said on the show, wake you up in April to see, you know, Game 7, Miami and Indiana. I don't know.
That'll be in May.
It might be rough to get there. It might be really rough to get there. That's going to
be
fascinating.
I still think Indiana is the, you know, and now they're the second best team. I still think that even the Nets are playing well and Toronto's playing well. I still think Indiana will be fine. It's all about just survive in advance, and I think they'll survive those first two rounds. But you know what? That just tells you how fragile professional sports is, right? We thought 2 months ago that Indiana could win it all, and now we're saying they might not even come out of the first round. So this team that looked like they couldn't lose, now we're saying to ourselves, you know what? They can lose. And it's the same personnel. Now, granted, Granger for Evan Turner, but it's not like they lost Paul George and Roy Hibbert to injuries, right? It's the same team. They're relatively healthy.
And give the Hawks credit, right, for going to Indiana and putting it on them for over by 20 points. And at 34-42, it looks like, you know, obviously with the Knicks losing to Washington and then Miami on Sunday, that the Knicks would need, like, a miracle, considering the Hawks play like the Bucks.
Oh,
and,
it's
know,
not happening.
Teams with poor records. You know, the Knicks, basically, Atlanta is going to be the A seed. And, you know, this is a team that lost Horford. Millsap was out for a bit, but they're doing it with a roster that people thought that they'd be in the lottery this year. I mean, you know, give them credit. Damari Carroll, Mike Scott, Teague, these guys are playing some
Kyle
really good
Korver
ball.
Kyle Korver for three.
Kyle Korver for three
and
every
you
night.
What,
so.
You mentioned the Wizards, so A, props to the Wizards for making the playoffs.
Yes.
And B, Nene is practicing. So he's missed six
That's
weeks with that
mean.
Sprained knee. But if they can get him back on the court.
They could beat Toronto, too.
Watch out.
That
6-3
matchup could. That 6-3 matchup could be deadly. So the East is, you know, kind of set, you know, 4-5. You're probably going to have Chicago being at home against Brooklyn, Washington against Toronto, Indiana, Charlotte, Heat, Hawks. Let's look at the West, man. Let's look at the West. I think the Heat will be fine.
All,
Wayne Wade will get healthy.
We need to shout out. Let's talk about the West playoff picture in a second. But first, we need to shout out Kevin Durant. I don't think people understand. He scored 38 against the Suns for his 41st consecutive 25-point game. And again, some stats are hocus pocus, and some stats are just, you know, really obscure and esoteric, but. To score 25 in the NBA, 41 times. Now, 41's an interesting number, right? It's exactly half of the season. So for half of an NBA season, he didn't score less than 25 points. That's pretty amazing.
Crazy.
I mean, wow.
It's very amazing.
That's impressive.
And, you know, and then he had to do it where there were some nights he had so much pressure on him where he could have easily been double-teamed because Westbrook was in and out of the lineup so much this year. So that's why it's even probably more impressive, you know what I mean, in my eyes. You know, hey, I said in the beginning of the year, you know, Durant would be MVP, and I think that's exactly what's going to happen. Now, when you look at the West, you know, up top and everything is probably pretty set. But this battle for 7, 8, and 9, last night, Phoenix, they took it to OKC at home, and they won. And they also beat Portland two nights before. They are jumping up and now in the eighth spot. Memphis had a bad loss, and Dallas has been winning their last couple games. So Memphis is 9 and Dallas is 7. How do you think this is all going to play out? This is pretty, it's getting fascinating. I mean, 32 losses for Memphis, 31 for Dallas, and Phoenix is right there with 31. So it's not like Memphis is, like, out of it. But
no,
this might
all.
Go down to the exact last game of the season, which is, what, like April 16th or something, that Wednesday. Playoffs start on Saturday the 19th. So
I got to think it will. And kudos to Phoenix, too, because Phoenix in the last 10 is 8-2, whereas Memphis is 5-5 and Dallas is 6-4. So you could argue Phoenix is the hottest of those teams, playing the most clutch. I guess we'd have to look at their upcoming schedules. But how great is that? The three teams are fighting for two. But here's the sad part is that the team that loses out is going to win 47, 48 games and not make the playoffs. And if you put 48 wins in the East, you're the third place team.
You should bump the Hawks out and make it a global, you know, playoffs. I think for the quality of basketball, 1 year they might mess with that and they might do it. I don't know if NBA fans would be upset with it. I think it'd be exciting and just go 1 through 16, you know, and just match them up like that. That, to me, would be, you know what I mean? You have the unbalanced schedule, obviously, you know, 50 games in your own conference and 32 out of your conference. But wouldn't that be exciting? That would be, like, crazy, yo, just to see, like, you know, so right now, what, you'd have number one San Antonio, I guess, playing number one, number 16, Memphis, or, you know, or number, well, actually, you have to go in the East.
No, they play the last team, Charlotte, or whoever has the last, you know.
Right, Atlanta would
record.
Get bumped, yeah.
Yeah.
So Atlanta would get bumped and Memphis would get in.
Well,
so,
maybe
you know,
more teams, actually, no, now that you think about it, many more teams would get bumped because Memphis would be in, Minnesota would be in, and then Denver would be out. Okay, so you'd take 10 from the West and 6 from the East. So
it wouldn't even be Charlotte.
It would be Washington.
It would be Washington.
Yeah.
So Washington and the Spurs in the first round. That's it's got a little
actually,
juice
no,
to it.
Would be, it would end up being Minnesota because Washington's got a better record than Minnesota. So
they do. Okay.
Minnesota would be the 16. So it would be San Antonio, Minnesota.
Wow, yeah.
And then it would be Washington.
See, that's a whole new playoff. That would add some juice to it. And by the way, you see Tony Parker. I feel bad. The Spurs, they're going to wind up not being able to get one more for their big three. His MRI on his back. If he's not 100%, and we saw that in the championship last year against the Heat, there's no way the Spurs can win at all. Tony Parker's got to be playing 110%.
When Ray Allen hit that jumper in Game 6, that was it. That was it.
That
Even
was
though
it.
San Antonio
yeah.
might have the best record overall, might do
they
it.
Had
it's
him on the ropes.
So hard to go back to the NBA Finals. It's so hard.
Yeah.
When your big three is aging, when Timmy is 37, Manu must be in his mid to late 30s.
And they've got a nice bench.
Tony Parker's got a lot of miles on him.
That's too much. If your big three is not healthy, it's too much. And guess what? Ladies and gentlemen, the Clippers are not only the highest scoring team in the NBA, they average 107.5, like a radio station, like WBLS. They average 107.5 a game. They're third in the West, but the Clippers are outstanding. They share the ball. Doc Rivers is doing a good job. Consider all the injuries they've had. Griffin, J.J. Redick, issues at the three, Crawford out, Chris Paul out, and they're 55-23, Ray. I mean, they're better than the Heat and Pacers.
Well, you know what? I had them going to the finals.
Joke.
I think so did you, right?
They still, yeah.
I had the Clippers going to the finals. They still might, but I'm always worried about an offensive team in a seven-game series because the matchups, they can take things away from you. They're two big guys. Don't shoot free throws. So down the stretch, it's tough to win.
Can they beat
the
Thunder? And they're going to play them in the second round. Clippers, Thunder are the 2-3, right? And the Spurs are the 1. So, you know, they'll probably get right by the first round, the Clippers. Take care of Golden State, although Golden State's not going to be any easy breezy matchup. But if, you know, if the playoffs ended today, you got Phoenix, Spurs, Clippers, Warriors, what, OKC plays 2-7 OKC against Dallas, and then Houston. Ooh, Houston, Portland. That's now. Listen, LaMarcus is back. I don't know if you saw him and Davis were going at it the other night. That was a good match. Anthony Davis is going to be a stud. I can't wait to see the Pelicans start to be healthy and get another piece. You know, they don't have their first round pick because it went to Philly in that trade.
Yeah, that kills
but,
you. That
yeah,
kills
that is
you.
A little killer.
You could have
killer,
that
yeah.
back. Oof, but they will have Drew Holiday healthy. And Anthony Davis healthy and Ryan Anderson healthy. So they still and if they can get, you know, Tyreke Evans to turn back the clock of time just 3-4 years ago when he was rookie of the year.
He's played pretty good this year. He's been in that lineup too.
They have some talent. But listen to this. This is another observation from the West. Portland, Houston, probably and also Golden State and Dallas, if they win, if Golden State wins two more games, Dallas wins three more games, you could have matchups in the first round where 2-7, 3-6, and 4-5 are all 50-win teams. How crazy is that? If you're the number two seed,
Dallas,
San Antonio or Oklahoma City, you're the number three seed, the Clippers, you're playing another team that's got 50 wins. That's just
It's a weird year. Yeah, those teams all beat up on the Eastern Conference, and that's what it tells you, you know. And then the team, the bottom feeders in the West, Sacramento and L.A. But it's definitely fascinating to see because, I mean, look, Phoenix with 46 wins, they're having a heck of a season, you know. And Dallas 47,
and
you're right. That would be
four draft picks. So if you're a Phoenix Suns fan,
yeah, nah, Phoenix
Suns, Dragic and Bledsoe, plus the Morris twins, Lopez,
you
got to
be happy. You're only going to get better.
Green and the four.
Can I tell you how badly would the Pacers love to have Gerald Green right now for some scoring punch off their bench? Luis Scola, as much as I like that move, he hasn't done that much for them. They would love Plumlee and Green back right now, huh? They probably regret that trade. That's turned out much better for Phoenix.
Yeah, well, I tell you what, I'm awake because it's April and I'm ready.
No, it's time to get hyped up. I mean, tonight's the championship. We're going to be heavily watching UConn and Kentucky, and we'll be back Friday 5 Eastern to, you know, talk about it and look forward, you know, as more of these guys declare for the NBA draft, and we'll hear what happens with the kids from Wisconsin, Florida, UConn, and Kentucky, if anybody, you know, declares, because by Friday they'll start to do it. I don't know when the deadline is, but it's coming up soon where, you know, high school kids have got to declare, you know, by the 18th or 20th to where they're going to college, and then the NBA guys have got to declare by the end of April whether they're going to the draft. And playoffs will get going, and the NBA lottery, it gets, Ray and Tay's got you covered for the NBA playoffs and all that stuff. And then, you know, it's almost time for the NFL draft. So it's a lot, man. I'm kind of hyped up and I'm excited. NBA playoffs should be fun. There'll be a couple of series you think you might just want to snooze on. But the West will be fun. Even listen, Phoenix and Dallas are no slouches at 7-8, and neither is Memphis. So they're going to give battles to the top two or three seeds.
Of course. Of course. I mean, they, like I said, everybody in the West will win, you know, even the three lowest seeds will win anywhere, will have won anywhere between 48 and 51 games.
How do you like
so
playing against Dirk Nowitzki? Woo, Dirk and Monte Ellis in the playoffs with Vince Carter off the bench, Samuel D'Alembert. That's Jose
and
Calderon.
They have experience.
Yeah,
you know,
no, that's what I'm saying.
The table.
It's going to be scary, man. Westbrook better be healthy. Better get his vitamins. Get your vitamins, Reggie, homie. What about? Let me ask you though. If Dwight Howard's not 100%, can Portland beat Houston in that 4-5? And Houston's had a heck of a season. They were one of the best teams after the All-Star break, and then now they're starting to struggle a little bit.
I told you they weren't legit when you were talking about, you know, people were talking about they could fight for the number one seed overall in the West. I didn't think that they could do that over an 82-game schedule. They're very talented.
No.
They're very young. But I just have an issue with at the end of the game, is LaMarcus Aldridge going to get you that bucket that you need in the playoffs in Game 6 on the road?
Game 7.
No,
Portland, but I'm talking about Houston, though.
So hold on. So that's the Portland side of the equation. Houston, yeah. Now, on the other hand, they have that guy, and his name is James Harden. So
yeah.
James Harden is legitimate. And a killer, not only because he himself can create shots, he can create for others. He's an 85% free throw shooter. He's 6'6", 6'7". He's hard to guard. And he's played without Dwight Howard all of his career before this year. So I actually think that Houston at times plays better without Dwight Howard. Now, granted, you're a better team with Dwight Howard for sure. But because they kept Ashik, and because they don't, you know, Terrence Jones has developed, you know, his stint down in the D League, he came back up on fire. And then they have, you know, Parsons on the wing. I don't know what they'll get out of Lynn and Beverly. Is Beverly going to be ready for the, you know, for the playoffs? Is he going to be healthy?
Can they beat the Spurs in the second round?
I think Popovich is too good of a coach to let James Harden single-handedly beat him. But I think they
could
win in the
first round. Yeah, but Howard Duncan, that's a heck of a second-round battle. You tell me in Texas, Spurs.
It's possible. It's definitely possible. Look, if
Chandler
Parsons
steps up and Ashik.
If that Memphis team of 2-3 years ago, that 8-seeded Memphis team, took out San Antonio.
And a younger, big three.
Troubles with size and with athleticism, right? So if you can, and Houston has size, they're not tremendously athletic, but they do have size, and these guys are legit. Now, I think Kawhi Leonard is the key for
any series
against defensively. If you can keep Kawhi Leonard on the floor, have him not pick up foul trouble, and if he can slow down Harden, then I think they're in much better shape.
That's going to be fascinating because I tell you, if Parker's not completely healthy, Houston's going to upset the Spurs.
Mills and Marco Bellinelli?
I do like Patty. Patty Mills has been stepping up. He's like, forget this, in and out of the league. I've earned my contract and I'm playing in the NBA. Good for him. You like to hear these stories with these guys because some guys struggle.
Isn't he Gary Neal? I mean, Popovich gets these guys to just play. Danny Green, nobody wanted him. He's a hot potato. Now, you could argue Patty Mills went to St. Mary's and New Zealand and this, that, and the other. Danny Green went to North Carolina. So everybody saw Danny Green many, many times on national
TV. But they saw him struggle in Cleveland, too. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's the other part of it. They saw him struggle. And, look, Danny Green, you know what it is? It's Pop's system. You know what I mean? There's some systems. Like, people say D'Antoni's system makes guys look so great and, falsifies their stats. But I think Pop's system makes cats two-way, versatile players. And they share the ball. The Knicks need to learn from that because you know what it is? When you've got everybody expecting to touch the rock on a possession, they're active, they're moving, they're cutting, they're involved. With the Knicks, if it's not Melo and then it's JR chucking up shots or Hardaway off the bench chucking up shots, cats feel like they don't get to touch the rock, so they're not as involved. That's the problem with the Knicks. And by the way, man, I just got to say this, man. Knicks broke my heart because I got excited. I thought I was going to go to the playoffs, man, and that loss to Washington.
I told you to slow your roll.
But I'm not going to knock Melo. Melo's had an amazing season.
He put in his time. He bought his lunch bucket. He did about as well as you can do. What is he averaging, 25-8? I mean, how can you knock that? He's hustling, and he's never a great defensive player, but he's certainly giving the effort. This has nothing to do with Carmelo.
Great season by Carmelo Anthony. I got to say that. I mean, definitely. But so you ready, man? You ready? You ready for Napier and Harrison to battle? Aaron?
I'm ready for one shining moment.
For
the sky. I love that. After the game,
somebody
to compile all the clips.
Luther, shout out to Luther Vandross, singing it out, man. God bless him. But, great show. Our hearts are with Connecticut, but our minds are with Kentucky. Tip it off, and let's play some ball. Ray and Tate today, man. Fun, should be fun. Jim Nance, Greg Anthony, Steve Kerr, bringing it to us back on CBS for the championship. Kind of weird to have the Final Four on TNT or TBS.
Yeah, that was interesting. But you know what? The money talks. So
yeah,
TNT
you got
to get some of that.
Give them a bone. Give them a bone and get the Final Four. That was huge for them.
Not
so
only that,
so
I don't know if you saw this real quick, but they had the Kentucky Wildcat broadcasters.
Yeah,
on,
the local broadcast
on
TBS, True TV and TNT.
True TV and TNT.
Smart.
Exactly.
Yeah,
it's
a new way to do it. I think it's good for the fans. So, hey, we'll be back Friday, 5 p.m., Ray and Tay today, talking sports with friends. Peace.